You ready? Here we go.
The Hit Breakfast Show.
All right.
Australia, meet your new McCafe blend. Smooth, rich with a hint of sweet berry. It's coffee fit for an Aussie.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for downloading the podcast. This is the way to do it. This is just the best. Cream of the crop.
It is.
Top of the pile. Every single break's like the cherry on top of the sundae. You'll never complain. Before we get into it, I was thinking of you over the weekend because I think I did a very Gabby thing.
What'd you do?
I went to Kmart with nothing to buy.
Oh, my God.
There was absolutely nothing we needed from a department store.
And how much did you leave with?
$175 worth.
Yes, that's what happens.
That's huge.
Yeah, it's what happens. You go to Kmart, you have nothing in mind, but just the little things add up and add up and add up until you've got a whole trolley worth.
I will say, Michelle bought two dresses, which she needed.
Love it.
And they were $29 each.
So what kind were they?
I don't know.
Are they hot? I want to go. All right, I'm going to Kmart this afternoon.
One's made out of material.
Nice.
That's all I can do.
I want it.
$29. So there was 60 gone like that. And then my daughter's birthday party's in a week. So we had to buy all the bits and bobs for, you know, lolly bags and what do they call the party bags and pass the parcel and all that sort of stuff.
I don't know why you're asking me. I don't have kids.
Boom. No, yeah. Dresses she cares about. Pass the parcels.
Unless I'm getting a lolly bag.
Not so much.
Dr. Melissa Kang is a GP who specialises in adolescent health, but is best known for answering all our questions in Dolly Doctor. Slip off the sealed section because Dr. Melissa Kang joins Cliffo and Gabby right now for Memory Monday.
Dolly Doctor, a.k.a. Dr. Melissa Kang. Good morning. Welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning. Lovely to chat with you.
We know exactly what Dolly Doctor was, but let's read out a few examples just to really get in the mood before we have our chat, Dr. Melissa Kang. So here's one we prepared earlier. No, this is a legit one from the magazine back in the day. I'm 10 years old and my mum thinks I'm too young to have a boyfriend. Oh. I don't want to lose him or hurt mum's feelings. What should I do?
What about, here's another one. I've heard that you could damage your reproductive system if you water ski without a wetsuit on. Is that true?
And then this one, I've started wearing tampons and was wondering if I can go to the toilet without removing it.
That's a really good question.
It is a good question.
They're all good questions.
And I personally learnt so much because of these questions in Dolly Doctor. How important was this article, this segment, this double pager in Dolly magazine to young women?
I didn't realise it at the time, to be honest. But over the years and people talking to me, plus research I've done and other people's research into this part of the magazine, it was really one of the only places that young Australian people could go to for all that information that they didn't learn in school, that, you know, parents felt really awkward talking to them about, like the questions you've just read out. And the fact they could do that anonymously and also knew that the magazine would take them seriously.
Yeah.
I think there was this kind of really interesting relationship that was built over the, you know, the life of that reader reading the magazine.
It was so huge. It actually, for me, transcended the magazine. Dolly Doctor was such a huge part of not just that magazine, but of the 90s in general.
Definitely.
Yeah. I was happy to read, like, when we found out we were going to chat with you, Dr. Melissa, that you are, in fact, an actual doctor. So you tell us a bit about, you know, what sort of doctor you are and your experience. And I will just say, as a two-parter sort of question, isn't it good to know that these questions were being answered by someone qualified?
Yeah, that's right. No, look, well, I studied medicine and I discovered a new specialty called adolescent medicine when I was a medical student, and I thought, that's what I want to do. And the Dolly Doctor side of it was just a lucky coincidence. At the time, I just was working alongside a GP who had been answering the questions, and she said, you know, you're interested in taking over. I've done this for a year or so. And I just went, yes, please.
Yeah. Wow. Well, you sound perfect for the role.
Yeah, look, I was just always really interested and love working with adolescents and young adults. I just find them endlessly fascinating, and they just have so much going on in their brains.
Do you have any questions that were sent through to you that you answered that really stick out in your memory? And also, are there any that you couldn't publish?
Yeah, look, so the way it works, and I must say, in kind of answer to your previous second part of that question, the magazine took Dolly Doctor very seriously. It was never they always had a medical doctor. They also had a wider net of health professionals like psychologists, people who might specialise in a particular area like gynaecology, consulting at times.
Wow.
And so it was actually the editor and the sub-editors who were responsible for selecting what would be published.
Right.
But they did give me access over the years to looking at the range of questions that maybe never made it to print, and that was most of them really, because there were thousands in the day, thousands and thousands of questions. And they only published, 5 or 10 per month. And if there were several that came up at a time, so when we saw some increases in mental health concerns, anxiety, depression, in the 90s and early 2000s, they really, they would do feature articles on that. Kudos to the editors. They took that role very seriously. And I think that's why it was such a popular column.
It's so important too, but for, I know a lot of the women who are listening now of Gabby's generation. Dolly was around for 46 years. It closed in 2016. Mm. Dolly Doctor is not around anymore.
Yeah.
Where are, I guess, young adolescents learning this stuff now?
Well, Dr. Google, I guess. Yeah. We know that from research. But I think what's lost, of course, is that kind of more personal relationship that you build with a magazine.
Right. I feel like there's something like about holding it and reading it and owning it and having it in your hands.
So personal.
A website just doesn't do.
When I was younger and I relied on Dolly Doctor for these kinds of answers and just really interested in the different questions that were asked, I feel like I did that because there was a lot missing in sexual education in school. They didn't really dive into those personal issues that we were going through puberty. Do you think sex ed has improved in the last 20-odd years, or is there still holes?
Look, it's yes and no, and it's very piecemeal. So there are now standards. There's a national curriculum and each of the states and territories uses that and adapts it to their state. So when you look at the curriculum and the syllabus, it does now cover a whole range of things that weren't there when I was at high school. However, what happens in the classroom is highly variable, and that's what we hear from young people. And the trouble there is that we don't have enough support and training for teachers. They also feel like they need to have backup things.
But this is what kids want to learn.
It is awkward. Mm. It is awkward. And I think we have to acknowledge that and work out a way forward.
It's got a ways to go, but
bring back Dolly Doctor.
It's still come a long way since watching Mr. Wright. Who was this? Is what I Mr. Wright was in his 60s, watching him roll a condom on a banana. That was.
It's come a long way since then. Yes,
burnt into my mind.
Mine was a tampon in a bottle of water. That was interesting.
Dolly Doctor, it was a massive, massive part of so many people's adolescent years, and so good to meet the actual Dolly Doctor. Real name, Dr. Melissa Kang. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much. Lovely to chat with you both.
Okay, so we do have a rule at the show that you're only allowed to talk about your wedding once a week because nobody cares about a wedding more than the person who's actually getting married.
And it's still a year away, so
everyone else feigns a little bit of interest just because we're good friends. Not that I'm pointing fingers at anyone in particular. But I do have a bit of a wedding debacle, and it's a strange one because I'm a marriage celebrant, so I like to think I know most things there are to know about marriage ceremonies.
Yeah.
However, whether or not you're invited to one, that is always an interesting
thing. It is.
And it actually came up on Friday because we had some former colleagues who used to work with us. They're not in the same building anymore, visiting, and they are an engaged couple. Mm-hmm. They met at work.
We knew them both through work.
Known them both through work. And they were visiting. They just came in to say hello. Now, I'm going to put it out there. They're engaged to each other and they are getting married. And I did not expect an invite to the wedding at all. I 100% was not
thinking it was going to happen.
On that realm, like I'm invited to the wedding. However, at the goodbye, and you were actually there. There's goodbyes because they came in, visited the office, said hello to everyone or whatever. And at the goodbye, the bride-to-be looked me in the eyes.
Mm.
And said to me, I'll see you in December. And I just went, okay.
That's when their wedding is?
I don't know.
I don't know.
She looked me in the eyes, the bride-to-be, and she just goes, we'll see you in December. And I just went, okay, yeah, fine. And it was that kind of thing where there was me, you, producer Brooke, there was the couple there. So there's like five or six of us. it wasn't really appropriate for me to go, like the timing wasn't right for me to go, oh, what's in December? And I don't know, in the back of my mind, I'm going, is that the...
Are they back?
Is there another... Like, are you coming...
visiting for Christmas?
Because, yeah, the wedding's not around here. The wedding's going to be in Brisbane. I'm like, am I invited to that? Because I haven't got to save the date. And then my mind starts overthinking it, going, oh, my God, if it's December, that's a really, really busy month. Like, radio stations are busy in December. So now I've been ticking over all weekend. Yeah. And I went home and I said to Michelle, I don't know if I'm invited to this wedding or not. And she knows the people. So what I need,
and you
got to
travel for
morning,
it, which means because it's in Brisbane,
a fair
so
bit of travel too.
You've got to
and I got
plan
kids.
Ahead.
And Michelle's busy; she works in retail. Like her work is busy as in December. She can't take time off to be with the kids or whatever. So 13, 10, 60. Essentially, I'm stuck here, and I don't know what to do. So I guess I want to know: can I ask this couple if I'm invited to the wedding?
Ooh.
It's a tough one, right? Or do I just have to sit and wait?
Because like... it can get real awkward, hey, because I actually did have someone who assumed they were invited to my wedding. Mm. And they just said, I'll be there with bells on when I got engaged. And I'm like, no, you won't.
No, you won't. You won't be there with anything on.
You won't be there
you
at
won't
all.
Be there.
And it can get real awkward when people ask.
That's how I feel now. Like I said,
but you need
outset,
a plan.
I 100% don't expect to be invited to this wedding. Mm. It's just when a bride-to-be turns to you and goes, I'll see you in December.
You're like, oh.
You go, oh, what's in December? I'm confused. Are you coming back? Like, have we made arrangements? Have you? I don't know what to do. And as you can see, my mind overthinks things. And I've been sitting on it all weekend, to be honest, waiting for a time slot to open up on the show so I can
do a therapy session.
But 13, 10, 60... Help me out. What do I do? I don't expect to be invited to this wedding, but the fact that the bride turned to me and goes, I'll see you in December. I don't know when the wedding is. I know nothing about it. I just don't know what to do from this point forward. And
But you're not going to rest until you know.
I need advice from a real adult.
13, 10, 60.
What
help Cliffo out.
What
can you ask?
Can you ask if you are invited to a wedding or what do I do?
Or do you just have to sit back and wait?
Gary, can you ask if you're invited to a wedding?
Mate, I would still call them up, but just don't even mention the wedding. Just say that, you know, you're curious about the comment that she made the other day and you wanted to know whether you need to book annual leave for an event that's happening because you haven't received any notification or invite.
In other words, play dumb.
What you're saying is be a grown-up adult about it.
Call
Make
them.
A phone call.
Absolutely.
But play dumb. You said you'd see me in December. Why? What's happening in December?
Exactly.
But then
don't mention any particular event. Just ring up and say, you know, I'm curious.
What's going on?
Because that's a busy time of year. I need to book holidays.
I would like to do it without the possibility of there being awkwardness. Like if there's a way I can find out without that, that would be beneficial. But Gary... Hey,
in other words, you don't want to have an adult conversation. You want to find out another
way.
Yeah,
that's the best suggestion so far though, Gaz. So I'll take it. Christy's here. Should I just ask if I'm invited? Can you ask if you're invited to another person's wedding, Christy?
No, it'll probably sound like you're a bit obnoxious if you did that.
Yeah. So what's your suggestion?
That's my problem with Gary's suggestion.
Yeah. I think you need to hit Gabby up as your wingman and get her to ask.
So then I have to deal with the awkwardness instead.
This is a fantastic idea,
well,
Christy.
Well, a little bit. Look, you just kind of go, hey, I heard you say something the other day to us about seeing in December. What is that all about?
Mm.
But what if they didn't say it to me? They only said it to Cliffo.
And it was. She looked at me. It totally was to me. It
and
wasn't
they'd be like,
to both
well,
of us.
Well, I'm not going
to
see you, Gab, but Cliffo's coming to the wedding. That'd be so awkward.
It'd be a real hard conversation for you to have, but I'm totally happy with that.
Yeah, you'd love that.
I don't mind that at all. All right, Christy, were your suggestions winning so far? I think, is this Kirsten here now?
Yes.
Hey, Kirsten. Can you ask if you're invited to another person's wedding?
From personal experience from last year, don't do it.
Oh, did someone do it to you? That's what I'm hearing.
Okay. So, yeah, I got married last October and a girl that I've been friends with since high school pretty much just automatically assumed she was a bridesmaid.
Oh.
And when I had to tell her that she wasn't, let's say she didn't talk to me for about 2 to 3 months. And then to make things worse, about 5 days out from the wedding, which she was invited to, she turned around and told me she could no longer afford to come.
Wow. Ooh. That's a bit of a slap in the face, isn't it?
So what I'm hearing from that is...
You know what?
Cliffo, you boycott it if you're not invited.
You know, what if I ring him and go, just ringing to see if I'm in, like if I'm a groomsman, like if I'm part of the party or whatever... And then that way, if I'm not even... No, actually, no, that doesn't work.
No, because then if they say, take that advice. No, you're not invited at all, it's even more awkward.
Oh, that's a shame. Because I was standing by for the best man call up. I'm not going to lie.
It's not going to happen. It's time for Gabby's Girlfriend Guide. I came up...
Because you're so good at it.
So good
at
it.
You need to advise everyone else.
No, well, I'm advising girls on how not to break up with your partner when they request you pick them up after a boys' night. Because this is all from learnings. This is all from life experience on my behalf. And I just thought I'd put it out into the world. If that is something that happens on a regular, there's some guidelines you need to put in place with your partner. So I try to be a nice fiance, a nice girlfriend, and pick Nev up if he goes out for a boys' night. I try to do that because he doesn't do it often. And so it also saves us money if I pick him up and he doesn't get a taxi. However, you need to put some guidelines in place if that's to happen. And on Friday night is when the guidelines came into play. So Nev went out for a boys' night Friday night. He asked me to pick him up. The conversation has to happen before they go out and before any bevies are consumed, right? So these are the three steps.
That's smart.
Yeah, yeah. These are the three steps. One, you need to confirm if they will be done and picked up in time for dinner and then confirm again. Because sitting at home waiting to eat isn't fun for anyone, especially when hangry you then does the pickup. You will probably break up in the car on the way home.
Yeah.
You do not want to be hangry.
I mean, Nev's a tradie, particularly if it's post-work drinks.
Yeah, that's what it was.
On.
Yeah. And then you're waiting at home and you're waiting at home and then you're hangry.
Mac is drive-thruing it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Smart.
Step number two, decide on a curfew. Because if it is after work drinks, you need to... No, as in, he can stay out as long as he likes. However, the curfew is, if he's out past 9 p.m, for example, then he needs to get a taxi. Like, your services are only available till that hour.
This Uber ends.
This Uber ends.
At 9 p.m.
Now,
that's fair enough. I'll be honest. As the man, like, I feel like I'm kind of representing Nev here a little bit. And the word curfew did have me a little sheepish.
Yes.
But I do agree. There has to be a cutoff time.
There has to be a cutoff time. And step number three, agree on what friends, if any, you are willing to also drop home. Because if you miss this step, you will be driving all over town dropping drunk dudes off at midnight. You know you will. So cover all these three rules when he's sober, but do keep in mind that once a few bevvies are under his belt, all reason goes out the window and you will get a call at midnight begging you to pick him, his friends, and a large Macca's meal up and tuck them all safely into bed.
Come on, honey.
Come on.
Hoppo only lives 20 minutes away. Macca's is on the way there.
The Cliffo and Gabby show and our state were under attack by New South Wales when their show Gordy and Maz passed us in Instagram followers.
They've worked hard for it. They've posted some great stuff.
Have they, though? Some of it's lame. It is. I'm just being honest.
Maz is getting her origin on. I love it.
This is the thing, though, right? Your show sucks. We're better, so follow our show.
We weren't just going to cop that. We opened the phones and asked Queensland what we should do to challenge New South Wales, and Pat had a winner.
See who gets the most followers before Origin Game 2.
Do we need to have a goal, though? Like, the most followers, or do we need to have a goal follower count?
I reckon, like, you could do most followers, but I reckon 5K. Let's just go crazy.
So we gave Gordy and Maz a ring to see if they would accept our challenge. First to 5K before game number 2 in a couple of weeks' time. What do you reckon?
Are we down with this, Maz? I think this is a fair challenge.
I prefer to play dirty, but we want to have a fair fight. This is a good challenge.
Game on, first to 5,000.
Starting when?
Now.
We started strong and went all the way to the top for support. But we've actually got Anthony Albanese, who was called in, the leader of the Federal Opposition
and
Party.
And New South Welshman.
And a proud New South Welshman, Albo. Are you happy to do this and get behind our campaign to beat Gordy and Maz?
Oh, absolutely, given that you've had me on and they haven't.
Yeah, beautiful.
Maroons legend Corey Parker even agreed to jump on and swing us some follows. Corey, being a Maroon to the bone guy, we were hoping you'd get behind us as the Queensland team.
Well, I can't see why it's not achievable. 5,000, that's pretty low, right? Why can't we double that and go for something higher?
Coming from the guy with 103,000 followers,
gonna,
it does sound low.
We're going to start at 5.
I can follow you for sure, yeah.
Please, that'd be fantastic. Bruno Boucher, the list king, called in to stir the pot.
People from New South Wales were all gorgeous with perfect facial features and lovely trim bodies, whilst Queenslanders are all obese, leathery skinned lizards.
Dump him. Dump him.
He's gone.
Nah,
he's out.
We can't allow that. No way.
He's off.
But that didn't faze you Queenslanders, because our phones wouldn't stop ringing for reasons why Queensland is better.
Nick, why is Queensland better than New South Wales?
Haven't we just had 30,000 people move here from other states? Yep. Has New South Wales had anywhere near that many people? I don't think so.
They've all come from New South Wales.
You're right. There's been an influx of, I believe it's a little even higher than 30,000 people moving to the Sunshine State. We got political when Kyle Felt helped us launch our very own Petty Origin political party.
Hi, I'm Kyle Felt. You might remember me from such football games as last week's State of Origin or any Cowboys game ever. Well, I'm here today to back Cliffo and Gabby for Petty Origin. Give Cliffo and Gabby a follow on Instagram. First of 5,000 followers wins the series. Let's show those dirty cockroaches that Queensland really is the greatest state. Follow Cliffo and Gabby today. It would be un-Queensland not to. Spoken by Kyle Felt from Cliffo and Gabby, Petty Origin, Party of Australia.
And we couldn't miss the chance to get the heart and soul of Queensland on Billy Moore, the man who created the state's glorious chant. And he told us what it actually stands for.
It means three things to all Queenslanders. Listen to us right now. It means help you, mate. It means find a solution. And most importantly, no excuses. Oh. Three pretty good things. So when you scream Queensland, it doesn't matter if it's playing marbles, netball or rugby league. If you've got the maroon going through your veins and you scream Queensland, that's what you're saying.
Things got real serious when we upped the stakes and created the Ultimate Maroons prize pack chosen by Queensland. The major prize for the Ultimate Maroons prize pack is $2,000 cash.
So you could buy yourself a better TV to watch the game, maybe throw a bit of an Origin party, whatever you want to do.
Maybe hire a plane to fly over the top of New South Wales and skyrocket.
And just go,
you suck.
And sure enough, we hit the magic number. Even if it was 2 seconds after New South Wales.
We are standing at 4,951.
They're at 5,000. But you can still win $2,000. Come on, guys. Oh, my God. We're there.
We're there. But we're still winners, Queensland, including Daniel, who took out the major prize. You've won the lotto.
Truly, financially, that'll be a really great help.
Thanks so much for supporting us, Queensland. Okay, thank you for downloading the podcast, everyone. As we always do, we give away an answer for Alpha Bucks for tomorrow's game.
Should I sing it? Like Alicia Keys in New York.
I was going to say no.
Concrete jungle in...
New York is your... Yes, she's off. Turn her off. New York
New
is your...
York!
Free answer for Alpha Bucks in the morning you hit. I apologise, everyone. Now to the social media crime that Gabby Elgood committed last night, and I don't think even knows it.
No, I don't. I'm ready to be handcuffed. What do I do?
It's not good.
What do I do?
So you can follow Gabby on Instagram. She's got this deep-seated wish that she wants to be an influencer one day.
One day.
Gabby's
I just like free stuff.
G-A-B-I. Chuck her a follow. Look, every follow's a follow, mate.
Every follow's
Get
a follow.
There.
Yeah.
But on your, this wasn't on our Instagram, so we're Cliffo and Gabby. You're just Gabby Elgood, your name on Instagram.
Gabby Elgood, follow me.
And
chuck us a follow.
Last night on
I'm
your own
so far.
Personal Instagram page,
yeah.
You put up a photo of you at an event. You were looking absolutely stunning.
Oh, thank you.
You looked gorgeous. Aww. You did your makeup on a Sunday,
I still have my the same.
You've managed to keep the hair overnight, which is
did.
Good. I know you don't usually do the makeup on a Sunday,
no,
so
I don't.
You went all out. You look sensational.
Thank you.
But you took a photo in a place where photos never need to be taken.
I knew this would be it.
You took a selfie. So it's time, Gabby, that we ask the question.
What's the deal with
bathroom selfies? Hey, we get it. You look beautiful and you're feeling great about yourself. That's a wonderful thing. And we totally understand. You run into a full-length mirror and you have a couple of champagnes under your belt. You're feeling loose.
Yeah.
Why not, you think to yourself. This is the point where you need to stop and remind yourself. You're taking a photo in front of where people literally poo. Sure, You can't see it because the cubicle doors are closed.
They were.
You can't smell it because there's enough ambipur in the place to make your local rubbish tip smell lavender fresh. But all the evidence you need is right there. You looking into a mirror with a row of toilet cubicles behind you. This goes for at-home bathroom selfies as well. The fact that it's your poo place makes no difference at all. You don't see me at home taking a quick pre-dinner selfie in front of the kitty litter tray. That's because where mammals defecate generally isn't a great backdrop. If it was, there'd be a row of dunnies behind Carl on the Today Show. You're beautiful, you're stunning, and you should show it off. Just don't do it in front of the John, the Crapper, the Bog House, the Thunderbox, or the Porcelain Throne. I'm Guy Clifton. What's the deal with bathroom selfies?
Do you know what's funny? I took a photo in front of this beautiful scene of pools and palm trees, but I chose the bathroom selfie to post.
Go to the one in the crapper. We'll put that one up.
It's time for a confession, guys, because there is something that I do on a daily. I know it is absolutely disgusting. Like, it is gross, but I can't help it. I have to do it. I have this urge to do it, and I have to do it. And it is picking my psoriasis. So if you've never come across psoriasis in your life, it's like eczema but worse.
Flaky
and,
skin.
And, yeah, the skin builds up. Like, it's an autoimmune thing where your skin tries to repair itself and just builds up so it gets real scaly and you have a heap of dry excess skin on these sections of your body. And I have psoriasis behind my ears. And the skin builds up to the point where you can almost sometimes peel it off like sunburn. You know when you peel your skin off in the one lot.
That is equally parts gross as it is equally parts satisfying.
But that's what I aim for.
Like, as a proud pimple popper kind of guy, I'm so grossed out by that. But I'm so equally satisfied.
I know, right? And so behind my ears sometimes, like, I really enjoy getting it at that perfect time when it's dry but still in one sheet and I can peel the whole lot off. But sometimes that's not the case. Sometimes it comes off in chunks. But it's one of those things that once it's in my head, I know there's a chunk of skin there that has to come off. I can't rest until I've got it all. Like, I have to keep picking and picking and picking till I've got all this excess skin off my head. And I end up with this like pile of skin on the floor next to me. And it's really disgusting. I know it's disgusting. And my mum had it when I was a kid and I used to go off at her for picking at her psoriasis. I used to get so disgusted by it and I was filthy at her if she'd ever do it. But I can't help it. I can't help it. I got to do it. And I'm so glad I got that off my chest. Is there something gross you do?
That was big of you to admit that.
I see people judge me when I do it and I still can't stop. Like, I see you looking at me going,
I'm judging
what
you right
you
now,
picking?
But I'm a big fat hypocrite because we all do it. And if you're sitting in your car now going, ew, I don't do anything gross like that. You know, I'm perfect. I don't pick anything. I'm so not gross.
You're lying to
yourself. Lying. Everyone does something gross.
Mm, what do you do? What's something gross?
Do I tell you my worst one? Because my worst one is disgusting. But like you,
yes,
I have to do it.
Tell me.
I think it's worse than yours.
Is it? What is it?
So there's a gap between my teeth, like a tiny little gap between my two front teeth at the very top. So it's like a three-way gap between the top of the two front teeth and the...
It's not an obvious gap.
No, but it's big enough to get like floss and toothpicks and stuff like that in.
Yeah.
Whenever I cut my big toenail...
No!
I have to get the end of it and I don't know why. There's something in me, but I have to pick up the big toenail.
No!
And I have to poke the gap between my teeth and my gums.
You're serious.
Yeah, every time. And look. Get it. It's disgusting. It's gross. And it's completely unnecessary. But there's something
in your head.
Wired in my brain. Like, my wife, Michelle, she can back me up. She's seen me do it.
I wasn't expecting that.
It's gross.
13, 10, 60.
But I can't stop.
I know. It's one of those things where you know you shouldn't and you know people would judge you for it, but you've got to do it anyway. 13, 10, 60.
Phil's called up. Morning, Phil.
Morning, mate. There you go.
Good, Phil. What is it for you? What's the thing that's really gross but you can't stop doing it?
Yeah, I'm a bad nail biter. And I've been doing it ever since I was a little kid. So
how bad are we talking?
pretty bad until it bleeds.
It can get
a bit painful, but I'm sort of getting used to that as well. So have you tried
that stuff that you paint on your nails
to try to stop it?
It's real bad tasting.
I actually started enjoying it, mate. So yeah.
Just drinking it straight out of the bottle.
Acrylic nails are the next one to try.
We'll see you at the nail salon, Phil. Mate, thanks for the call.
All right, mate. I even took up smoking to try and kill that habit, but I ended up with two habits then, mate. So,
we wouldn't recommend that, Phil.
That's, no, do not try to quit one habit with another.
Yeah, two wrong habits don't make a right habit, Phil. Maddie, good morning.
Morning.
What is it for you, Maddie? What is the really gross thing you know is gross, but you can't help but do it?
I pick my friend's dandruff.
Oh.
Pardon?
And I can't seem to stop it. I just don't stand it.
As in, like, you pick it off their head? Or their shoulders?
Their head.
Yeah, that's...
Well, I've got big chunks, so gross, you don't want to come in contact with me.
Gross. At least it's my own toenail I'm putting in my own mouth. Dave. Morning, Dave.
Morning, you two scabsters.
Yeah, that's us.
We are gross. We're gross,
it's
Dave.
It's Cliffo and Scabby this morning.
What is it for you? Is it you that does something gross and you can't help it?
No, it's not me.
Oh, no wonder you're so judgy.
It's a guy I used to work with, and we nicknamed him Stinky Mick.
What he
used to do is he would pick his ears while you're having lunch with his car key.
Ooh.
And then he'd tap the key on the table, and he'd do it every day.
Picking your ear is one thing, but tapping it on the lunch table, that's just the next level.
New employees, who's that? Oh, that's just
Stinky Mick.
Picking his ears again.
That was Cliffo and Gabby's podcast. Australia, meet your new McCafe blend. Smooth, rich with a hint of sweet berry. It's coffee fit for an Aussie.